This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 446 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and joining me from Melbourne, Australia, once again from CreativePhotoWorkshops.com.au, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
I am, I always have been, and hopefully I will continue to be.
Sounds like a plan.
Do you know, I had a realisation today.
Yeah?
That I could never commit suicide.
Okay, that's a good thing.
But yeah. Because I wouldn't be able to listen to music anymore.
No.
Isn't it amazing that something like that is so profound a thing in my life, music?
Yep.
That the thought of not being able to listen to music is actually enough to keep you alive. That alone, without anything else, that any other influences and thinking about all the other things that keep you alive, that alone would be enough.
Yeah.
Photography, who cares? If I didn't take another photo, it wouldn't worry. But music.
Yeah, I'm the same. I could not stand, like, you know, Max, when he was a little bit younger, was always into playing this game, Would You Rather?
Oh, yeah.
And one of them was, yeah, Would You Rather Be Deaf or Blind? And I was like, blind.
Take my eyes.
Anytime, yeah. Anytime. Do not take my music from me.
And my photography wouldn't be impacted by that. But my That's funny, isn't it? So I found two new bands today, which is a big thing. I mean, two bands that actually sound like they've got promised to be,
ongoing
bands. I mean, and they've got a catalogue already of music. I just hadn't heard of them before.
Yeah, right.
So one's called Spoon,
mm-hmm.
and Ted Leo and the Pharmacists.
Right.
So, it's just...
And what style of music?
Good.
No, that's not... No.
Is that a style? Is that a genre?
Genre-wise, what are we talking?
Ted Leo would be postmodern punkish.
Okay.
Kind of sound. Green Day, but not so depressing.
Okay.
And not so strident. More, let's say folk Green Day.
Okay, yeah, fair maybe. Enough.
Very hard to describe. A Spoon would be rock folk.
Right.
Rock, but not even that. Rock, folk, psychedelica, electronica.
Right.
Oh, Radiohead, but without the whining. Maybe.
Excellent.
So it's pretty cool. So, yeah, so there we are. I'll be alive for a bit longer.
Excellent.
So a few more episodes to record, I'm thinking.
Fantastic. We'll get to 500 yet.
How's your week been?
Mate, I haven't had the camera out other than to play with it, because I'm still just trying to get my head ready for Sri Lanka. And not so much the still stuff, but more the video stuff. I really want to get at least an understanding of what I'm doing with the video stuff before I go, so that I'm hopefully not shooting absolute crap that I can't use when I get home. However, Tuesday of this week, so 2 days ago, I had one of my work from home days, and that was the day when I sat down and I spent 5 hours compositing the 7 members of the Newcastle news team into a single image. I think I mentioned to you that we weren't able to get all of them on the same day.
That's right. That's right.
And I pretty much had to get, I think there was 2 people I was able to get on the first day, and there were 2 people I managed to get on Monday who were the last of the 7. Everyone else was single days, single person per day kind of stuff. And so even on the days when there were 2 of them there, I still shot them individually, just to make it consistent when I did actually come to stitching it all together. And I've got to admit, so I'm completely out of the Adobe camp and have been for 3 years now, but I generally don't go into GIMP very often. You know, it's not my modus operandi. You know, I generally work on a single image at a time, unless I'm shooting a multi-image pano, in which case I'm stitching it in Huygen and then I'm doing my post-work in Darktable anyway.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, to go into GIMP it was like, oh, wow, I've got to kind of get back into the mindset of, you know, multi-layered compositing and masking. I mean, you have masking in Darktable, but it's a little bit different in GIMP. And, yeah, so that was a lot of fun. And, you know, it took me about 5 hours to composite these seven people together and, you know, get all nice seamless masks in between them all, and then, you know, minor contrast tweaks and lighting tweaks just to make sure that as a group they looked consistent. I had 2 guys and 5 girls. So I put 4 girls across the front and then the guys on the sides at the rear and 1 girl in the middle at the rear. And then I also shrunk the people in the back row down to 95%, just to kind of give that idea that they were a little further away. Which I thought worked really well. And then I sent just a low res JPEG off to the boss in Newcastle and said, "Here's 5 hours worth of work. I hope you like it." and she came back and she said, "Wow, that looks amazing." So I said, "Okay, I'll send you the high res version." So she did also send me a text on, I think it was yesterday morning, and she said the individual portrait, well, the Brekkie team duo portrait and the other 3 portraits, which we looked at a couple of weeks ago, they are all now printed and hanging in the foyer. And she sent me a photo of the foyer with the, you know, the lounge chair below the 4 prints hanging on the wall. And, yeah, it looked pretty cool. So, pretty impressed with that. So, yeah, so that's awesome, been my week in photography. So.
Well, that's pretty cool, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
That composite stuff's hard. I had this idea. I did this shoot once with a mate of mine, a musician friend of mine, and we're going to make him. Yeah, remember Paul McCartney's Looking Up film clip? Coming up film clip.
No, sorry. No, I don't.
It's a film clip where he plays a big band.
Oh, okay.
He's the entire band.
Oh, right.
Okay. So he's like the sax, the trumpet, the piano, the drums. There's Paul McCartney from the Beatles days there with the outfit, the hair, nice. The guitar, the whole thing. So he's got all this whole band, and Linda McCartney's there because, you know, she's his Yoko.
Yeah.
And so I had this idea to do this composite photo of this mate of mine, and we came up with this elaborate idea where he grew a full beard. And then during the shots, we trimmed it. And then some he had a full beard. Some he had a goatee and a moustache. Some just a moustache. Some just sideburn. Yeah, he'd shave between shots. Some of them he'd be women backing singers.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so we did this entire thing. We both got our cars booked for parking on a piece of dirt under a bridge, which apparently was a nature strip. And that cost us $160 to be for illegal parking.
Jeez.
Did the whole thing and then realised I don't have the Photoshop skills to make it look anything even remotely any good.
Oh, no.
Not even remotely any good.
Oh, dear.
You know, and it's just like, And then, I don't know, this must have been, I don't know, 8-10 years ago I shot this.
Right.
And I've still got them sitting there, these photos, going, one day maybe, yeah, one day. Maybe I'll put it on Fiverr.com. Someone composite these photos for me. And good on him. He asked a few times, you know, how's it going? And I think he eventually realised, well, okay, that was that's just not going to work.
It was just never going to happen.
That's just
couldn't you have farmed it out to our mate David?
Sorry?
Couldn't you have farmed it out to our mate David?
He's always been too busy, so.
Well, I've just emailed you the composite of the news crew.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, to your CPW email address. Well,
what can I say? So you got this. I've got the composite image. It's in front of me right now.
Okay.
And I'm looking at it.
Yeah. Thoughts?
And it's awesome.
Oh, thank you.
You did a great job, dude.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with it.
There's some.
The one thing that I would change if I had to redo it.
The guy at the back right?
No, the girl at the front right, because of her hair.
Yeah, it's trying
to get the guy behind her to show through the trestles of her hair was an absolute nightmare. So in hindsight, I should have put her at the back, because then I wouldn't have had to mask anything through the hair.
Yeah, I mean the biggest problem with the images is the inconsistency in lighting between them.
Yeah. And yet, they were all shot in the same room under the same lights.
Yeah, but it's all, they're all different. Yeah, and the guy at the back right is the one who looks the most pasted on.
Right.
Yeah, he's like he looks like an afterthought. In fact, both guys look like afterthoughts.
Yeah.
The women look okay. Even the woman at the back looks good.
Right.
But the men do look like afterthoughts.
I don't know why. It's really weird because there's two video lights positioned at 45 degree angles from, you know, in front of the subject, and then there's a hair light at the back in the center, which you can see on the girl who's in the middle at the back.
Yeah.
But all of them were shot in exactly the same position, in the same room, under the same lights. Yeah.
I mean, you get different reflectivity of skin, but some of them are very flat.
Right.
Some of them are quite punchy.
Yeah. It's very odd. But anyway.
But no, I mean, I'm envious of the ability to have even done what you've done, dude. So
oh, thank you.
Well done. Well yeah. done indeed.
Yeah. So that's been my week. Your cool. week has all been Tamron.
Here's the thing:
15 to 150 or whatever it is.
35 to 150. Well, yeah, I got in touch with my mate Andy, the guy, the national product manager for Tamron in Australia, and said, "Look, yeah, am I going to get a 35 to 150 before I go to Africa?" He goes, "Yeah, yeah, come down next week and pick it up." Meaning this week, pick it up. You know?
Yeah.
And so we'd arranged to meet up. I think it was Monday. Yeah, Monday must have been. And then he's texting me through the night before. He goes, "Oh, I forgot we've got this." The other side of their business, so they've got all this photo business, which is Tamron, Think Tank, Peak Design, Three Legged Thing.
Yep.
A whole bunch of photo. But then their other division is really high-end video stuff, like broadcast video.
Oh, okay.
Division.
Yep.
Called Bird Dog, and they've got all this stuff they do with broadcast video. He goes, "Oh, I've got this. I'm supposed to take one." He builds motorbikes. "I'm supposed to take one of my motorbikes down to this presentation tomorrow with the video team."
Right.
"How about you come along there? They've got this thing called light panels, which are these really high end, beautiful LED light panels."
Yeah.
And he goes, "Come down there. There's the guy from light panels is over from the US doing a talk on lighting as well." He goes, "Yeah, you might want to, you know, come see that." I said, "Yeah, I'll come see that. It'll be interesting. Yeah, I wouldn't mind."
Yeah.
"Yeah, hearing someone else's talking on lighting." And so I've got down the studio and I've got my new lens, the 35-150, which I'll talk about in a minute. I picked up my fridge magnets, two huge fridge magnets.
Okay.
Which I took a photo of them on my fridge, right, saying, yes. Yeah, either I either need a bigger fridge or smaller magnets.
That's right.
But they're for the side of my safari vehicles in Africa.
Right.
To brand them Tamron.
Yep.
So then I've sat down. And I had a quick talk to the lighting guy before the thing started. He was a really nice guy from the US. And then the video guy got up and he talked video for, I think it was about a year and a half. Me too.
Right.
And it was all acronyms and stuff that I know meant something to someone somewhere once.
But not to you.
My God. And it was just mind-numbing. It was just like, no way, what does this mean? And it was so I put down there, today I'm learning, it's in my Facebook post.
Yeah.
"Today I'm learning about perceptual quantizers and hybrid log gamma."
Yeah.
And then it goes on, BBC, HLD, LUT, HDR, LOG,
yeah.
SMPTE, VPID, HDR, SDR, PQ, HLG, ANC, FD, SHDR, WCG.
Some of them I know, but some of them I don't.
"I can clamp output actual color space within Rec.709 too, apparently."
Nice.
Which, no idea what clamping output actual color space is. And then my mate who runs Ring Photo in Germany puts in, "I'm a more Rec 2020 guy." And he goes, my response is, "I've got a headache." His response was, "To make sure the headache stays more, how about the 4.2.0, the 4.2.2, the 4.4.4? And my response was, "I prefer 999, being that he's German. I thought he'd get that, you know." It was just, it was full on. And the guy was not supposed to talk for that long. He talked for an hour and three quarters.
Really?
And I had to leave at the hour and a half mark.
Wow. Yeah.
And so I ended up staying a bit longer than I should have. Saw the last couple of seconds of couple of minutes of the guy talking lighting, which looked really good, and then I left.
Yeah, right.
But I've got the 35 to 150, so I've got them in my hot little hands. I've taken the camera with me, knowing there might be a chance to stop and do a few little snippy snaps on the way home.
Yep.
And I stopped in a little reasonably local Vietnamese Buddhist temple.
Oh, okay.
Hindu temple. A Buddhist temple.
Yeah.
Vietnamese, I'm just going to call it a Vietnamese temple, because okay. It could be Buddhist or Hindu, so I can't tell. Hoping there'd be some of the monks around.
Right.
But there were no monkeys. Right. None of those. So I just took a few snapshots. But I took a couple of photos of a Buddha statue in sun, which I really liked.
Yeah.
Just the out of focus softness background, the way it falls off into out of focus was just beautiful.
Yeah, nice.
It had on the back of the camera, it had this creaminess to it.
Yep.
It's just lovely. Just lovely. So I did a couple of quick shots with that. Actually, that might have been Tuesday, and then when the next day my daughter was sick, my 8-year-old was sick, so I dragged her out of a sick bed and took her out, took photos of her. So I wanted to photograph a person and a bit of lighting on it.
Yeah.
So we had to go to the local shops. I thought I'd do a few minutes of photos on the way back.
Nice.
And I got a couple of okay ones. So beautiful lens. It's quickly become my favourite lens.
Yeah, right. Good travel length. Like for, you know, as in if you are travelling, it's a good, you know, range of lengths to cover within one lens.
Then you toss in the 17 to 35, which is a very light lens.
Yeah, nice.
And you've got 17 to 150 and two lenses. That's a pretty sweet kit.
Yeah, totally.
So my kit for Africa will be the 17 to 35, the 35 to 150, and a 150 to 600.
Yeah, sweet.
So three lenses from 17 to 600, and I'm sorted, you know. But I mean, the 35 to 150 is nowhere near as heavy as my 70 to 200 2.8.
Yeah, right.
And it's half the size. So half the size and let's say half the weight.
Well, you need now is to get yourself a 1.4 or a 2X converter and you'll be 17 to 1200.
I've got a 1.4 converter as well. Oh, yeah, so
nice.
I've got
that with me as well. So you're almost out to 900 mil.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I can't shoot anything at 600, let alone 900, so it's not going to get much use.
Yeah, but surely if you're just leaning on the, you know, the edge of the car shooting, you know, wild animals.
Problem is, the slightest movement at 900, and the thing's gone into the next country.
Yeah.
You're in Tanzania, you're looking through this bit of Tanzania, you sneeze, and you're looking at bloody Namibia or something. It's like...
Fair enough.
It's just too much. I'd rather have an object that is crisper, clearer, smaller.
Right. Yep.
And a higher percentage of shots.
Yeah.
Than bigger, harder to wield, slower to focus, more contrasty.
And heat haze at that length.
Yeah. Exact compression issues, higher percentage of missed shots.
Yeah.
I'm taking it.
Yeah, fair enough.
And I'm sure there'll be an occasion where I might need to use it, but it won't be my preference.
Yeah, fair enough.
But, 17 to 600 and three lenses is pretty darn good.
Yeah, that's sweet.
I've completed a lot of my tours now, rather than carrying, 17, normally my 15 to 30, my 24 to 70, my 70 to 200.
Yeah.
Now, especially for weight-wise, the 17 to 35 rather than the 15 to 30,
mm-hmm.
even though the 15 to 30 is better, the 35 to 150.
Yep.
And I know, even though it's a mega huge heavy lens, I'm not going to go anywhere in the world ever without this new 35 1.4.
Right.
And even though I've got 35 covered twice on both lenses, this thing is so astoundingly good.
The prime.
The new 35 1.4. Tamron claim it's the best lens they've ever made.
Wow.
So 15 minutes I've had shooting with it so far has been astounding.
Yeah, nice.
So, yeah, I can't see myself going anywhere. Even though that's it. I think it weighs like 2 kilos by itself.
Wow. What's the filter size on that?
I think I'm going to say 77 or 82.
Right. Wow.
Yeah, maybe 70. I don't know. But it's big. But it's so gorgeous, it's kind of hard not to.
Yeah, nice.
But I think so. This 35 to 150, I think it's about $899 US.
Yeah, nice.
And I think it's going to be like $1,299 Australian.
Yep.
So yeah, so it's 2.8 to 4 through the range. Yeah,
nice.
Which is
that's great.
I shoot a lot, and I said, and it's out of focus. Silky smoothness is just gorgeous.
Yeah.
So for all the bokeh lovers out there, it might not be bokehlicious, but it's smoothalicious. It's smooth. It's gradation out. This is the thing with lenses, and this is I've always been the thing for me, is feel.
Okay.
Yeah, and some lenses just have a feel about the way the image look. And people, anyone who's fallen in love with a lens will probably know what I'm talking about when I'm saying this. But there's a feel and a look that is just unique to that lens, that the same focal length in other lenses, even if it's a more superior lens, doesn't produce that feel.
Right.
And that's why you have to keep going back to it, because it has that signature look that you just love.
Yeah, right.
And fall off of that 35-150, I'm in love with already. It is just gorgeous. And that's it. And the sharpness of and the fall off of that 35-1.4 is astounding. So nice. I'm praying that arrives. I think the shipments for those come in next week, so I'm hoping to get one of those before Africa too.
Yeah, nice.
And then to make the week even more better, I get home and I get it's one of these dodgy emails. You know, you're wary to open because it it just doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
And it was UPS Quantum View.
Okay.
Was who it's from. I'm going, Quantum View? What the hell's it? Oh, and then a UPS shipping notification, tracking number, blah, blah, blah. I go, okay, I'll click on it. And I clicked on it, waiting for my phone to die. And it was the shipping details for my Narbox 2.0.
Oh, nice.
On the way, and it's going to be here in time for Africa. I'm a little concerned. It's just looking at the information here because it's a fairly small piece of kit, but the parcel weight's 4.5 pounds.
Right.
Sounds quite heavy.
4.5 pounds. That's a bit over 2 kilos.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Something that, so unless they're sending me 5 of them, which I'm thinking is not happening. Yeah. It seems odd, so yeah. I'm curious whether it was something. But here's the distressing thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's got those track your parcel things.
Oh yeah.
So I got this. Must have been yesterday morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's now tonight. So it's a good 36 hours.
Yep.
Past that time, I click on the shipment progress.
It hasn't moved.
It's all just saying label created.
Right. Okay.
It hasn't been picked up. It hasn't been received in the warehouse. It hasn't been shipped to the airport. Just label created for 36. How frustrating is that when you're desperately waiting for something?
Totally.
And it's sitting there, label created. If it hasn't gone past label created stage by tomorrow, I'm going to get in touch with them and say, what the hell's going on? I'm desperate.
Yeah.
Because one of my fellow ambassadors in the US was getting his today.
Right.
So I was as jealous as all get out.
Yeah.
And they're telling me it has come on leaps and bounds since I saw it in October last year.
Yeah, right.
Both the product itself and the software, all the apps that they've built for it is supposed to be killer.
So nice.
Hanging, dude, for that to arrive.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I think that's about it for my photographic week.
Yeah, right. Cool.
Yeah, a few photos taken, which is unusual.
Yeah. Nice. All right, what do you got on your list?
I've got not a lot,
but
I did see a rumor about the iPhone 11 or whatever it's going to be called.
Okay.
What if they call it X1? Because that's like 11, XI, Roman numerals, maybe, because who knows. But it's going to have smart framing.
Okay.
So now the new one's going to have triple cameras.
Right.
Okay, it's going to have three cameras. The normal phone camera that it's always had, cameras always had. Then the last couple of generations has had a portrait lens, the 1.5x or 2x, whatever it is.
Yeah.
The next one's going to have a wide-angle lens as well.
Right.
I mean, much wider than, so, which has been good because they've never been quite wide enough anyway.
Yeah.
So it's got to have its wide-angle lens. But as with the portrait lens, when you shoot a normal photo, it kind of shoots a portrait one at the same time. It's going to shoot a wide-angle one at the same time.
Right.
Yeah. So if you've done a photo and you don't quite like the framing or you've chopped a bit of the top of the head off or something, you can reframe.
Wow. The photo
afterwards.
Wow.
See, it's using its artificial intelligence to kind of rebuild the scene.
That's
based on a wide-angle version of the image and the image you've got, Wow. This is what I'm saying about how this this AI photo stuff is going to completely change the world of photography and what's possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
It sounds quite incredible. So I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah.
Not to sound arrogant, it's extremely, extremely rarely do I even crop a photograph, let alone do anything to it, because I don't miss what I want to shoot.
Yeah, sure.
I shoot what I like. I don't. Oh, I wish I'd put that in. And I rarely have to go any closer or anything because, I shoot how I want it to be shot.
Yeah.
So I don't see necessarily there's a lot of
benefit to you.
Yeah, but having said that, won't it be nice to be able to explore outside of your own vision other viewpoints in the leisure time when you're not under the pressure of trying to take the photo?
Yeah.
And I say this because I do take proper photographs with my iPhone quite a lot when I'm on tours.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I do like doing portraits with my phone as well as with my camera. So it'd be nice to sit there in the after period.
Yep.
And just see a different vision.
Yeah, right.
See a different viewpoint. Just sort of see, well, hey, what do I feel about that? And that may make me shoot slightly differently.
Right.
Or see differently or creating. So there might be some opportunity there in visual learning for me, which I'm looking forward to trying. So
yeah, right.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And the only other I've got two other things. One thing was Square. You know, Square, the little payment system.
Credit card payment system, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they've set up their own photo studio.
Oh, okay.
For all the small businesses that use their system don't necessarily have the ability to get quality photography for their sites and so on to sell their products online. So they've set up a photo studio, I'm assuming it's only in the US, where you ship your products to them. They have a robot photographic system set up.
What?
For $9.95, it will photograph your product for you in beautiful, fabulous, full 360
seamless white light, yeah.
Yeah, and wraparound 360 video stuff. For $10.
Yeah, right.
It's going to make a lot of – so straight away, a lot of product photographers that come out and go, oh, it's going to kill our industry. But these people were never employing them anyway.
No, that's right.
So it's not. But I could see how what a great opportunity that is for people who have a small business to be able to offer this stuff, which if your stuff looks better, it sells faster.
Yeah, totally.
Frankly. Yeah, if it looks really good and professional online, it's going to sell more. So I thought that was interesting. And once again, it's another robotic photography. It's a pre-programmed product photography is quite a new take on things as well.
Yeah.
And the last thing I've got, and I haven't got it on your list because it's just some words.
Right.
Was this week is the 50th anniversary of Man on the Moon.
Yeah.
And today in history, is it today? What's the date today?
So today is Thursday, and they landed on Saturday.
24th, last night.
Yesterday.
Because this is in the US, it's still as yesterday.
Okay.
This guy's put up this cool little thing about the returning. And just to give a bit of an idea, I mean, we think about the technology or lack thereof that they had.
Yeah.
And the fact that this stuff had never been done before, so how do you know what to build? And me and my wife were talking about it. How do you build a spacesuit if you've never been in space?
Yeah.
How do you build a suit that protects you from whatever if you don't know what the whatever is?
Yeah, the gamma radiation. Yep.
Yeah, who knows what?
Yeah.
So I just like this little bit, so I thought I'd read it out for the posterity of the week that we're in.
Sure.
Our guys are hurtling towards the Earth from the moon at 36,194 feet per second.
Jesus.
Or 7 miles per second. Or 24,678 miles per hour, 40,000 kilometers an hour. This is 20 times as fast as a speeding high-powered rifle bullet and 40 times the speed of sound.
Wow.
Yeah, and they're hurtling towards Earth. Command module separates from the service module. And since we don't want the service module landing on top of the thing, and now they go into the burn as they re-enter the atmosphere. Yeah, it's like, oh my. Yeah, but there's 40,000 kilometers an hour. It's just.
That is insane.
It's amazing. It's, again, 1960s technology.
Yeah.
So apparently there's the Apollo 11 documentary out in the cinemas at the moment.
Right.
Or cinemas, as some people like to call it. And it's supposed to be absolutely incredible. So it's on at my local IMAX. I'm hopefully going to try and get a chance to go see it at the IMAX before it finishes.
Right.
Yeah, and once you see this documentary, you really grasp how much they did with how little they knew and had. You know?
Well, if you go back to like the late 80s, early 90s, the earliest, well, not the earliest, but sort of around the time that I started to become aware of personal computing, we had 286 Intel chips. And then after the 286, we had 386 chips, and then the 486, and then we got what's called Pentium. And everything's followed on from there. And I remember hearing somewhere someone saying that the computers that calculated everything to do with the moon landing and the return was the equivalent of a 386 processor.
Or less, yeah, I reckon.
Yeah. And you think now, you know, we've got processors that are hundreds of times more powerful than that in the palm of our hands and in our hip pockets, you know. It's just crazy.
That's only if the palm of your hand is in your hip pocket.
That's right. Yes, that's right.
So. I mean, my first computer, so I was desperate for a computer. You know, it was the Atari 400.
Yeah, right.
Back in like probably about 85.
Okay.
You know, and then you get this computer that you've been desperate for so long, and you finally get it, and you realize they don't actually do anything.
No.
Yeah, you know, there's nothing to do with computers in those days. It wasn't like you could go on the internet.
Yeah.
I think my kids they wanted to use my computer the other day to research some stuff. I think they finally realized, well, the computer isn't anything special anymore compared to an iPad. Their iPad is so accessible. Yeah, the computer is such a slow way of doing the stuff that they would need to do.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, the Atari 400, you'd sit then, and the only thing you could do then is go and buy like a book of games.
Yeah.
A book of code. And sit there for hours typing in this code.
Compile the game yourself.
Yeah, so you'd write this game for like 3 hours. Oh. Then you'd hit run and it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Then you'd go through all the code for another 2 hours, finding the error where you'd hit a colon instead of a semicolon. Yeah.
Exactly.
Get it working. So after 6 hours of work, you get it working, realize it's crap.
Yeah. I remember my cousin, they were better off than we were, and they had a Commodore 64, and he had a game that we used to play, and you'd have to load it off cassette.
Yeah, that's right.
And it would take like 10 minutes to load the game.
And then you get after the 10 or 15 minutes to load, it would say error, start again, and you rewind. So I mean, I did that for years until I sold an Olympus 400 300mm F4 lens, which was a stonker of a lens. It was just incredibly sharp.
Right.
So I could afford to buy a 3.5-inch floppy drive. 3.5-inch or 5-inch?
It was five and a quarter. Yep. And then we went to 3.5.
So I bought a floppy drive just to make the load up speed, you know, time going from 20 minutes to like, you know, 12.
Yeah.
Or some crazy thing like that. And once again, the games are all crap anyway, you know, by comparison, you know. But yeah, once again, so this is 1985. This is 16 years after the moon landing.
Yeah.
And this is what a computer could do. Nothing. Yeah. It was mind boggling what they could do. Like, so
just this week, you know, in light of all of the Apollo 11 stuff, I saw a quote that, you know, the Aldrin and Collins and the other bloke, Armstrong, they took some memorabilia, I can't remember what it was now, of the Wright brothers' first flight to the moon.
It's like a piece of the wing or something like that.
Yeah. And then the tale of the quote was, what is astonishing is to think that it was only 66 years between these two events. The first time man flew and the first time we went to the moon was 66 years. I was like, holy crap. Anyway.
Wow. So you put it in that perspective, that's astounding, isn't it?
It's phenomenal. It's phenomenal.
I'm sure I've mentioned this before, but 10 minutes from my place, there's a memorial plaque overlooking the area where the first plane flight was done in Victoria. I think it might have been in Australia.
Right.
First plane flight done in Australia. And it was done by Harry Houdini.
Is that right?
It is, yeah. Wow. Just astounding. So, who knew Houdini even came to Australia, yeah. let alone through planes, which I haven't seen listed anywhere else.
And another thing that I found interesting, sorry, we will get back to photography, people.
Not necessarily.
The other thing that I found interesting was that those three on their Apollo 11 mission also took little mirrors which they left on the moon, and NASA uses those mirrors to measure the exact distance from the Earth to the moon by the reflected light.
With laser. That's how you can do it yourself. That's how you can prove that man went on the moon.
Right.
Okay. Because you can fire a laser at the moon and it comes back.
Yeah, right.
And if there was no mirror there for it to bounce off,
yep.
it wouldn't come back.
Yeah, right.
So that's the ultimate proof that man landed on the moon. Yeah. And I heard another great one the other day about, you know, that we can be assured men did land on the moon.
Yeah.
Instead, because it's the height of the Cold War when Russia and America were at each other so much, trying to one up each other.
Yep.
And there were spies in both networks of yes. things everywhere, that if one thing wasn't legit,
yeah.
and Russia had lost face, that America got there first, and they knew by their spies that they didn't, yeah. they would have been all over that.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
that would have been, yeah. Plus, they had 400,000 people working on it. It's kind of hard to keep 400,000 people quiet.
Exactly. You know?
But, yeah, so, yeah, and getting back to photography, Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
I think anyone who's stuck with this podcast is it might not be the photography that's first.
That they're here for.
Well, I mean, I just not think they're expecting much, is right. what I'm saying.
Okay.
Well, expectations are low, so the fact that we've even mentioned a camera earlier on,
right.
or a lens,
yeah.
we've already met our quota.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, so don't stress yourself too much, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
It's okay.
Well, Adam sent us a link to airtasker.com.
Now, a podcast wouldn't complete without that sentence.
That's right. Exactly.
Tell you what, here's the thing.
Yeah.
When I'm in Africa,
yeah.
I want Adam to co-host.
Okay. There you go, Ads. Gauntlet has been thrown down. They're tiny shoes to fill.
No, the big shoes were the fully empty.
Right.
So what's this Airtasker job?
So Airtasker is one of these sites like Upwork, Odesk, Fiverr, you know, that kind of thing where people, you know, bid down to the lowest possible margin to get a job. And this particular subsection of Airtasker.com is /jobs/photography. So if you too would like to rush to the bottom on prices for photography jobs in your area, hit up that link and knock yourself out.
Oh, you can get photography for scrunchies for $60. Photographer for – no, this is not too bad. Photographer for event, $350. That's not too bad. Photographer for 30 minutes,
$50.
Wedding wedding videographer, $350. That's terrible. Because everyone knows you put the word wedding on there, it's five times the price.
Yeah, I'll shoot it for that, but then you can edit it.
Yeah.
Because I'm not editing it for that money. Well, they predict that
if you take 1 to 2 tasks per week,
yeah.
your earnings will be approximately $1,126 a month.
Yeah, if everybody pays.
Yeah. Well, I think the way Airtasker works is they have to pay. Once they accept the job, they pay Airtasker.
Oh,
Airtasker
it goes into escrow. Nice.
Yeah. So, no. They pay Airtasker and Airtasker pays you.
Yeah, okay.
There's no pros.
I got burned years ago with Odesk, where I was doing some audio freelance stuff on Odesk and, you know, had a couple of people who, you know, basically got me to do work and then just never paid. And I just kind of lost faith in the whole system after that.
Yeah, so I would assume, having used, I can't even remember the name of it, one of these type sites in the past to do some brochure stuff for me.
Right.
You pay in advance to the site and the site. So I'm assuming that's the way it would work.
Right.
But if you do 3 to 5 tasks a week, your average is $2,800 a month, which isn't to be sneezed at.
Yeah.
Because if you're, let's just say you're a wedding photographer.
Yep.
That's your bread and butter, and that's taking you up. Let's say you're doing 3 a month. Let's say that's 3 Saturdays a month. Let's say take it up, and you've got your workflow down pretty well.
Yeah,
you have a few days free per week.
Mm-hmm.
You could put a couple of task jobs in there. You do two or three.
Yeah.
You'd be up for adding an extra couple of grand to your income per month.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Better than
it's,
nothing.
It's and once again, you know, it's as I say with that the shot.
What's the shot?
The product photography. The
Square.
Is it shot, square, same thing. Both start with an S and then T. Yeah, these people aren't hiring people anyway.
No.
So it's not, yeah, so you're not taking work away from somebody else. That's, I don't know.
Yeah.
If it's done okay and the expectations are managed, I don't know if maybe I have a problem. I don't know. Oh, I could see. If it works, it could work quite well. And it's all about, with all these sort of things, is how much time does it take me to do? How much time does it make it take into effort? And how, you know, what's the least I'm prepared to earn?
Yeah.
And, you know, and I was, this is sort of came across my mind. I was thinking about something the other day, today, and it was like, oh, it's only a dollar. Yeah. But I'm going, oh, yeah, but that dollar is really hard to find for some people.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah. If you are a struggling photographer or and you've got a family to feed, and it pays $50 that you wouldn't have had.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and all power to you if it helps you, you know, to keep your dream alive to be a photographer, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Hey. Adam Forsberg, who is another listener of ours from Wisconsin.
The good Adam.
Yes. Oh, that's harsh. sent us a link to tmj4.com, and this is a story about couple of brothers who were flying their drone over a motor vehicle accident site as it was happening, and Flight for Life, which is obviously the emergency services at this particular area, basically they had to hold off on landing their helicopter and then had to, you know, be assured that this drone was out of the area before they could take off, you know, all of which slows down the ability for the emergency services to get the patient to hospital, you know. And kudos to them, the two brothers concerned who were flying the drone turned themselves into the police and are cooperating with the investigation. I don't think they were intending to be a menace. I think they were just, you know, being inquisitive and didn't realize the potential
impact.
Yeah.
And they made, and once again, you don't know there's a helicopter coming in. It's like if there's a fire, let's say, because the fire's a little bit easier for people to visually grasp because of the smoke.
Yep.
You're not allowed to fly your drone near it.
Right.
Okay. Because you don't know if there's going to be need for an emergency flight or whatever it may be. But in your normal thoughts, if there's a little grass fire near your place, no one's flying in bloody water bombing planes or helicopters, so you can't necessarily think it's a bad thing to be flying your drone.
Yeah.
Okay. You're flying your drone up in the field and there's a car crash on the road next to you and you fly it over to see what happened.
Yeah.
You're not to know necessarily that it's serious enough that a helicopter's coming in and somehow they know it was there and was being – I want to know how the helicopter even knew it was there.
Because people had seen the red lights from the drone. It was at nighttime.
Yeah, oh, okay.
And so, you know, the drone was easily visible because of its little red blinking lights. Basically
– Well, it's kind of against the rules to fly your drone at night anyway, so that's
– Right.
Yeah, straight away bang, you know. There's kind of no excuses, really, then. That's the case.
So anyway.
Thanks for that, Adam.
Yeah, thank you, Adam. And so then there's a couple of stories that I found through the week. One was about Sony having registered patents for 6 new full-frame sensors. What's interesting about one of these, and I know, Glenn, you're going to go to sleep straight away, is one of them uses what's called a quad Bayer structure. And this
the Bayer structure.
Actually uses an 8x8 grid, so 64 photo sites to represent one pixel. And what's really interesting about this is that they are dividing they're in groups of four, so like four green, four blue, four green, four blue, and then on the next row, four red, four green, four red, four green, and so on and so forth. And the idea is that alternate photo sites of the same color are doing HDR processing by having two of those photo sites do a long exposure and two of the photo sites doing short exposure. And so the idea is that they can create better HDR images by virtue of the fact that these photo sites are working differently. So obviously the ones that are exposing longer will introduce more noise because they're generating more heat. Those that are working shorter will be more accurate. And yeah, it's a, just really interesting, I think. So be keen to see where that goes in the future of upcoming sensors.
Yeah.
If I understood it correctly, that's what they're saying.
What was really good about that?
Tell me.
My signal cut out. It was completely blank.
Fantastic.
Until that last couple of words you said at the end of it.
That's excellent. That is excellent.
So, brilliant.
The next one I found on DIYphotography.net is this photographer creates epic underwater rooms in his backyard. And there's a little video attached to this blog post, only runs for a minute 40. Basically, this guy builds a three-quarter room set and decorates it differently each time, and then submerges it in his swimming pool, and then has these models swimming in the room, and he photographs it with an underwater rig, and they look amazing.
That's so cool, isn't it?
Yeah, just put him in the list of people we don't like.
Right into the basket.
Yep. So
right into the basket.
Highly recommend you check out the little video that goes along with that, because it's pretty impressive stuff. The next one is again from DIY Photography, and it's all about Facebook is apparently adding a hidden digital tag whenever you upload images to Facebook. Now, that's not so much of an issue because it's their platform and what they do with it is their business. And we've all agreed to their EULA when we upload our images. The problem is if you download an image from Facebook, that tag is embedded within the image and goes with the image wherever you happen to send that image after you've retrieved it from Facebook. So a few people are sort of a little bit noses out of joint over this, because apparently this has been going on since at least 2015, and it's a bit of a sort of a privacy issue thing. So I didn't read the whole story, but I got the gist of it. So follow that one for anyone who's interested in that stuff.
Just because you're paranoid doesn't people aren't trying to kill you.
That's right. And the last one I got was Xiaomi teases the first 64-megapixel smartphone with Samsung's new ISO cell sensor. Now, there's no release date yet, but they, you know, because Samsung have been sort of talking about this sensor and has been showing off what it plans to do with it, but hasn't actually announced a phone with the sensor in it just yet, but Xiaomi now has. So, 64 megapixels on a smartphone. This is crazy talk.
So, it is. I mean, it's hard to imagine it's going to be any good.
Hard to know.
Yeah.
But it's quite a large sensor. I read in there somewhere it's like a 1.7-inch sensor.
That's too bad.
Which seems quite large for a smartphone.
For a phone? Absolutely. Yeah. Things, until it comes out, you just don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, we'll wait and see. And that is it.
Well, I can just say five final words.
Yeah.
Ted Leo and the Pharmacists.
Okay.
Check them out.
Will do. Yeah. Fantastic. All right, mate, well, you have a good week.
I will.
Now, are you good for next week?
Yes.
Okay, because that'll be our last one before I head off.
Will it?
Yes.
That'll be the second last one before I head off then.
It might be the second last week, but it'll be the last podcast.
So awesome. So, Adam, get your microphone ready.
Yep.
And Bruce will be in touch.
Absolutely. Awesome, mate. All right, well, you have a good week.
All right, mate. Talk to you next week.
All right, mate.
Bye, everybody.
Shutters Inc. Another audio2.com quality podcast. For questions, comments and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.